thanks to our sponsor, ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 382, where today we're going to talk about Microsoft Teams integrating with Salesforce and Azure Leads and Confidential Computing, recorded live October the 22nd, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Raygun.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy application experience for your customers? With Raygun Application Performance Monitoring, you have all the information you need at your fingertips to find and fix errors and performance problems across your tech stack down to the line of code. With Raygun, monitor the impact of your performance improvements, quickly identify and resolve issues, and see how your code performs in the hands of your customers, saving you time, money, and sanity. I've personally used Raygun and Hyperfish for the last 4 years to help me sleep better at night, knowing the customers we've worked so hard to get are having a great experience. We use Raygun to alert engineers proactively so that we can be the ones to tell customers when we've fixed the problem instead of them calling us to say something's wrong. Raygun.com is my secret weapon in shipping high-quality code. Check it out at Raygun.com and get up and running in minutes.
Back to the show. 2-2-2-2-2-2020. A lot, a whole lot of twos in that one. I finally got the intro right this time.
Nicely done.
Nobody commented on the show about our complete flub last week for the intro.
Oh, yeah. Yeah?
Yeah. But
oh, well. People are too nice to us.
That's something I've never been accused of. Hey, CJ, what is new in your world this week?
I am looking forward to this election season being over. We're in the last couple of weeks. It's crazy in the US. If anybody's listening from outside the US, be thankful you're not here. Although you're in the thick of it, you're in Florida land where you're getting bombarded with ads much more than I am in Liblandia over here in the top left. And so we're not worth focusing the ad dollars on, but you're getting it on all sides from what I hear.
Oh my goodness. I've lived here all my life and I'm used to seeing ads, like political campaign ads. I don't ever remember it being as saturated. I didn't want to say bad.
Saturated,
but
gotcha.
I don't remember it being as saturated as it is right now. I mean, it is, like the other night I sat down to watch I turned the Monday Night Football game on. I have completely lost interest in the NFL, it seems. I mean, it's like I have about an ounce of interest in the NFL these days, where I'll turn a game on and it'll just be on for background noise and then I end up just not even paying attention to it. Mm. But yeah, I turned a game on and the Monday Night Football game on, left it on, and I just sat there and started counting the ads. It's like, this is amazing how many ads there are. And then like last night, I like watching one of the nightly news, the 30-minute nightly news shows at the end of the day, just to get a summary. It's like, especially when, you know, you're busy during work with work and you don't have time to see what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And I usually watch about 15 or 20 minutes of it with my wife. And last night there were four ads in the span of 15 minutes of programming. And I'm noticing a change. Like, this is not a political statement, this is an observation. Like, the news has been saying things about how Biden has been outraising Trump and that Trump's got money woes. Even apparently you have money woes if you've got over $100 million left to spend in the next week.
In only two weeks.
I feel so sorry for those people. But you can, and even though, like you said, Florida is a huge battleground state for the election, that it was like it was 4-0 in terms of how many ads I saw last night. And like earlier in the week, it was like almost a 3-1 ratio of Biden ads versus Trump ads. That's not just the campaign. That's like all the PACs, the political action committees, spending money as well, which it was just surprising to me But yeah, I mean, you're right. It's crazy. I mean, it's like, this is, I am really looking forward to seeing what the total voter turnout is and like what the percentage breakdown is.
It's going to be a crazy, crazy turnout, I think, this time.
Historically, it's about 60%. Okay. 60% of eligible voters end up voting. So that's, if you look at the number of people who have voted as of midnight, October the 21st, the election is just under 2 weeks away. I think it's something like 23% of the people who voted in the last election have already voted
Wild. So far
through mail-in ballots and early voting. My county is over 34% of the number of people who have voted.
Wow. I wonder if it's because more states are doing mail-in now, or people are just choosing mail-in or drop boxes or whatever because of what's gone on with the pandemic, and that stuff's always been available. But they're just taking advantage of it this time around.
It's hard to tell because I've never paid attention to how many mail-in ballots come in, but it is hard to tell because it's like kind of calling the game at like the end of the first quarter or the second quarter. Mm. It'll be interesting to see like what's the percentage breakdown this year of mail-in ballots, early voting, and day of voting, and compare that to previous presidential elections. It's just more apples to apples kind of a thing. So
if it were up to me, I'd go drop a thing in a drop box, which we're a fully mail-in state, right? So you can either send it in the mail or you can go drop it in a drop box, but have been for decades. And I would do that over standing in a big long line, even in the best of times, let alone in a pandemic, right? So the thought of going up and lining up for hours, just not that appealing.
I agree. I'm with you. I mean, my wife did the early voting. She wanted the experience of going in and voting in person. I did the mail-in ballot. I've always done a mail-in ballot for like 20 years. But this time I actually tracked it. I wanted to see how the process worked.
Yeah.
It was neat watching it, but I don't, as long as it's counted, that's all I care about now. So in the past, exactly. I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but to vote, but
if it counts
this year, I think it's that thing. People are so passionate on both sides. Then there's the concern of some people about the pandemic and getting sick at the polls. And it just, I don't know. Interesting stuff.
I don't even know. I think one day we're going to look back at this and go, how did we ever think it was going to work expecting everybody to go to a poll on one day? You know what I mean? Like one day we'll look back at this and go, that seems archaic.
Okay. I agree with you. I mean, I like there was a time when early voting wasn't a thing. And I remember they were talking about making it a 48-hour thing. So you didn't have to, the big deal was about missing work. And it's like, it'd be nice if there was like an online model or if there was a...
Do it on the weekend?
Yeah. Or I mean, online or mail-in, it's like, why do you have to be there in person to do this stuff? Like make
it.
If it's supposed to be, and this isn't just the United States, I would think about this in any free country where if it's supposed to be a vote that everyone gets to kind of vote on who they want to be their representatives and their leaders, isn't the goal to have
as many people vote as possible?
If you want as many people to participate, then you want to make it, it's kind of like a website. You don't want to make your website not be mobile friendly because you want everybody to be able to use it.
Yeah, there you go. I voted in the New Zealand election that was just gone past as well. But because I'm over here in the US, that was all done completely over the internet. So I didn't need to send anything back in over snail mail or anything. It's all go online, identify yourself, print out your voting forms, fill them out, scan them in, and then upload them back to a website. It was a breeze.
Make it easy, man. Let's just make it easy.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty bummed out today.
Why?
So I'm a big race car fan.
The SpaceX thing didn't launch.
No, I'm not surprised. I know that they were doing other checks and stuff, but the weather sucks over here. So
gotcha.
I'm a big race car fan. A big racing motorsports fan. IndyCar's opening weekend was their opening weekend race. It's a race I always go to down in St. Petersburg, Florida. That was right when the pandemic was really starting to hit its swing and in the United States. It's the same weekend that all the other pro sports teams shut down. That was on a Thursday, and then the race was supposed to be that following weekend. Well, they postponed it to this coming weekend, and we got the picture of how they're going to make changes and all this stuff. And my wife and I just finally made the decision today that it's like just not comfortable doing it yet. And so now I'm now sitting on, unfortunately, about a couple $100 in tickets for a family of four for 3-day race weekend that I'm trying to dump as fast as I can on some site and try and just get something for it. So
yeah, gosh, that sucks. Not going, but hey, better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's other things that were coming into play with it, not just the pandemic, but gotcha. I guess what the pandemic is impacting. So, But hey, how would you like to go through some Microsoft-only cloudy news? We got a little bit of 365-y stuff, a little bit of Azure-y stuff, and then we got a couple picks.
Sounds good to me.
This episode is sponsored by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. This podcast is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and Regional Director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word, Shift Happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. And we're back. Mr. Johnson, would you like to lead us off with our first pick of the day?
Speaking of the pandemic, Microsoft has pushed back its return to work from January to July 2021. This doesn't exactly impact us so much, or anybody listening perhaps, unless you're from Microsoft, I suppose. But its US offices are they're only going to consider opening them in July 2021. So was going to be January, now that's not looking so good. So they're going for July. But even then, they're going back to that whole you don't have to come back at all model. So that's that I guess it doesn't necessarily make much of a difference to Microsofties either at this point. I mean, you might as well just never go back. But then that's a lot of Microsoft buildings just sitting empty forever. So I actually do think it takes a big toll on work, and I think Microsoft will want to get back to some form of in-person at some point, because I definitely think we haven't nailed the technology yet to the point where it doesn't impact you. I just cannot believe when you work in teams and teams of teams that not being able to get FaceTime has zero impact. Mm-hmm. I'm not over that hump yet. So especially when you're sort of an old company like Microsoft, oldish. So I think they'll want to get back to in-person, but it's been pushed out.
Yeah, and I think there's I don't know how many, have you done any work, in-person work meetings since this whole thing spun up, like the whole work from home thing? And
a couple in person, but only just one-on-one, like outside, we'll sit outside and have a coffee or something like that.
So not like a group thing?
Never a group thing, no.
So I've done, I think I mentioned it on the show before, I do a thing called a mastermind. I've got two or three of them, I've got three of them that I'm in, and one of them has got four people total in it, and it's local. Hmm. We didn't do it for a while, and then we started them up, I think about 3 or 4 months ago. It's once a month. We do it on my back patio. Everybody's spaced out, you know, masks, all that stuff. We don't do masks during it, but everybody is very spaced out on the patio. And it's a very different work discussion being in person than it is just trying to do stuff online as a group. We were doing them before online and doing them now like in person. For me, at least, it's a big difference. So it works great for some people, I'm sure, but I agree with you. I think that being in a room with people to be able to collaborate on something and work on stuff makes a lot of sense.
I can't put my finger on what I would call it either. There's something missing, but I don't know what to call it.
It's like a spark.
Yeah.
There's some kind of a spark, or there's some kind of a connection that you get with someone else that I think, at least personally for me, it's the lack of distractions. Sitting here at my desk and doing a podcast with you, it's easy to get distracted. But when we've done interviews with people where we've been in person, like when we sat down with Scott Guthrie or we sat down with Troy Hunt, it just feels very different, and it just feels like I'm more
engaged.
That's a good way to say it. So
yeah, no, I definitely agree. You know, one of the big problems I think is that you can't look into somebody's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a romantic way, I see. Don't get excited. I just meant like, you know, it's harder to connect with people. So you're looking at me weird. But, you know, it's hard to connect with people because webcams, like the webcam's up here, mm-hmm. but you're just slightly below it.
Yeah.
Right? It's not the same as just,
I think
you know?
That's a good one. I've been going between Zoom and Teams calls today and went back to back with two of them. And I think I mentioned it on the show a couple of weeks ago, but I remember just how much I dislike how Teams puts the pictures of everybody else at the bottom of the screen instead of at the top of their window. Like,
yeah.
I have you, I strategically place like this, the person I'm talking to under the camera, like as close to the top of the camera yeah. there. But I find that when I'm talking, I'm looking at myself when I'm talking. I'm not looking at you when I'm talking.
Mm.
But yeah, you lose that connection.
Yeah, something there.
So I guess, you know, going from that whole, it would be nice to be able to connect to, let's just get really disconnected. Microsoft has announced a partnership with SpaceX to connect Azure Cloud to SpaceX's Starlink satellite internet. This is a cool.
That's so cool.
It's just cool to see that they're doing this. It's going to allow them to work together to deliver new offerings for both public and the private sector. So cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the whole satellite uplink thing that mm. Azure was launching. And so maybe it's got something to do with that partially. I'm not sure, but I like the direction.
That is what it is. Yeah. It's Azure Space.
Yeah. Man, we've got to do something with this. That'd be so cool.
I've got to find something.
Slightly more down to earth. I heard that this year is the year of Linux on the desktop, AC.
It is?
Yep. This is going to be it. This is it.
I thought it was the year of Yammer. Or no, lists.
That's totally different. This is OSs. Okay. This is a whole different category.
Mm.
Now, laugh as you might, for any good desktop, you need a great browser. So Edge is launching
a great
preview
browser.
Build. I was waiting for that. Edge is launching a preview build for Linux. So now you'll be able to go Edge on Linux as well. Okay. I don't know where this came from or who thought this was a good idea, but can you imagine somebody, just picture for a moment, somebody who's running Linux as their desktop operating system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say Ubuntu or something like that. Somebody who's running a Linux-based desktop, they sort of strike me as a sort of person that's not going to gravitate to using a browser from Microsoft. Have we really got to the point where those people think a browser from Google is worse than a browser from Microsoft? Have we actually gone full circle?
I really don't think so. I think that that person's got a Gmail account. They're using the G Suite and Google Docs and Google Sheets and everything for their stuff. I don't see them really caring about Edge.
I mean, outside of Richard Stallman, right? Stallman's using like the Lynx browser, I'm pretty sure, right? Like he's got text only and a command prompt type of thing going on for surfing the web for him, right? He's a special kind of person though. But in general, it just doesn't strike me as a huge market. So I don't know why they're doing this.
I don't either.
I don't know. I guess we'll find, there's a video here I might watch to go find out what's motivating them to do this. But yeah, anyway, you can go get Edge for Linux, some Linux distros, Ubuntu, Debian, Fedora, and OpenSUSE. Yeah.
Well, again, I'm going to switch gears on you. I'm going to go back to Azure. Azure has announced a modular data center, and it's kind of what it sounds like. It's simply just an Azure, a container, like not a physical thing like you would see on like container ships and like container trucks. It's a container with a bunch of Azure stuff inside of it that you can have delivered to your organization, which makes sense for people who are like need like mobile command center or humanitarian assistance or military missions, mining exploration, things that need like high compute, high intensity compute, secure compute on Azure, but they don't have great connectivity. And so they want to be able to bring Azure out to these remote areas. Well, now they can do that. Although I'm not sure they're listening to our podcast because if they don't have connectivity, they're not getting our show. So I don't know how they're going to find out about it. But hey, you can now get a container. You can now put a, I have a feeling that somebody at Microsoft, Brendan Burns, is probably sitting there going, yo, I hear you like containers. Now you can put a container in your container.
Possibly. You could put lots of containers in your container.
You can.
Curious. I guess that's kind of cool. Yeah. I mean, I could see uses for this on oil platforms, for example, or mm-hmm. I don't know.
Drawing a blank.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something else that was cool, but
ship to shore.
The moon,
mm-hmm.
Ship to shore. I'm just trying to think of places you're going to need a bunch of compute. You know, the moon is an obvious one. Maybe this is how they're doing the New Zealand data center that they're opening. They're just going to stand up a bunch of containers, one on top of each other, and turn it into a data center.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good. Maybe you could put a container in a plane now, and you could actually be flying a data center around the world.
Huh.
I don't know.
It's like snakes on a plane, except with servers.
I'd expect they could take the fans out of the servers, though, and just kind of open a window. And just
open
the
window. Get it cooled down. If this doesn't make it into flight sim, then I'll be disappointed.
There you go.
Hey, that's pretty cool. I'm going to skip gears slightly from Azure and move on to some Teams news here. Microsoft is partnering with Salesforce to go stick stuff into Teams.
What? Wait, hold on. Microsoft is partnering with Salesforce on their flagship collaboration product.
Yeah. Microsoft and Salesforce have an on and off arrangement, I tell you. It's quite curious.
It's like that abusive, like, boyfriend-girlfriend relationship from college where it's like going, but he hits you. Like going, yeah, but he's so sweet. It's something like, it's weird. It's like they fight, but then they get back together.
It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. And I'm not, I'm not trying to make light of, like, domestic, like, violence. I wasn't trying to do that. It's very much like, they fight with Salesforce and then they partner, and it's like they kind of know that they have to both kind of be, you know, friendly to each other or work together, I guess.
Yeah. Coopetition.
Is that a new word?
No, I mean, I've heard it before. I didn't make it up.
Oh, it's new to me.
Somebody did. So the relationship is all about, you know, obviously getting stuff into Teams, being able to surface, you know, leads and so forth into chats in your various teams, be able to find information about leads and opportunities and stuff like that. In a Salesforce tab, stuff like that in Teams. What's curious about this, right, is when I was at Microsoft last, we were doing some work with Salesforce, and then Microsoft bought LinkedIn, and then Salesforce didn't like Microsoft, or Mark Benioff didn't like Satya. They were all mates before that, and then he took them off his Christmas card list, and now they're doing this again. They've done more before this, but you know what I mean. Like, it's that sort of on and off kind of relationship. But yes, Teams is... Actually, this brings up an interesting one that we don't actually have a link for this in the show notes. I should go get this. But I think there was a research analyst yesterday. Who was it? Morgan Stanley downgraded Slack, strangely enough.
I saw that.
And seems to think... Now, it's just one investment company's opinion, but they think they're getting squeezed out by the bigger players in some of the larger opportunities and deals. It doesn't mean they're going away. It just means they're not getting quite the traction and those customers that they were looking at, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. We do have a link for it now in the show notes.
Okay, great.
But I'm curious to see the next round of numbers that come from both those guys.
Yes, Microsoft's earnings are next week. So we will see, and now Slack's public, right? So you can go get all their details.
Mm-hmm.
Love public companies like that.
Mm-hmm.
See what's going on.
So as part of the episode title, we've already talked now about Salesforce and Teams integrating together, which we have a link to in the show notes, which is, it's allowing you to kind of having like adaptive cards pop up in messages and having contacts and leads and stuff show up in Microsoft Teams. The other topic that I wanted to highlight was article or a post by Mark Rusinovich, the CTO for Azure, where he talks about Microsoft and Intel committing to delivering the next generation of confidential computing. And so Azure was the first public cloud to deliver confidential computing, which was a big thing that Microsoft pushed today or as of the middle of October. This post is highlighting the fact that Microsoft is teaming up with Intel and is going to be an early adopter of the third generation of the Intel Xeon platform, which is called Ice Lake, which includes the new thing that it includes is full memory encryption and accelerated cryptography performance for confidential computing with Intel Safeguard extensions. It's going to be available later this year. So it opens up more confidential computing options with Azure. And there's some other stuff in the article or the blog post that he talks about and highlights what some other companies are doing with this.
Nice. Staying on the Azure theme, Azure AD's had a little couple of outages over the last wee while. One was rather large. in particular towards the end of September, September 28th, in fact. And there has been a root cause analysis, I guess, want of a better word, description put up on the Azure status history. So back in September 28th, people were unable to log in. Like if you were not logged in already, you definitely weren't able to get in a lot of cases. And if you were already logged in, I like this terminology they use. Users who were not already authenticated to cloud services using Azure AD were, and I quote, more likely to experience issues. So not experience issues. They experienced issues too. And depending on where you were in the world, you were affected differently. But it was pretty bad. So like the Americas region had 17% success rate for the duration of the incident, for example. Hmm. So not many authentication attempts were working. Mm-mm. Whereas Europe, strangely enough, had 81% success rate, which I thought was pretty interesting. Australia, 37%, and Asia, 72% for the first 120 minutes. Anyway, so what happened was an update that was being developed was targeting an internal validation test run, aka your dev environment, and was accidentally deployed, causing a crash upon startup, i.e. in startup.cs file probably, and if it's a .NET project, something broke on app start, or what is it, global.asax?
Oh my God, and you're going like way back.
Yeah.
I don't remember that stuff.
Yeah. A latent, and to make matters worse, a latent code defect, i.e. a bug that we didn't find, in the Azure AD backend service safe deployment process, i.e. there was a bug in the thing that was supposed to stop bugs from shipping, caused this to deploy directly to our production environments, bypassing all our normal validation processes.
Okay.
So they shipped a crashing bug straight to prod. That's basically.
So I have a couple observations with this. First of all, that was the best breakdown of an RCE that I've heard yet. So we need to make sure that we do these in the future, and you now get that responsibility, because that was fantastic. Second of all,
you need to drink during these too. If you've had a couple of scotches first, I'm sure I could get a lot more creative.
Oh, let's make that work. I mean, we'll change the recording from 8:30 your time to be AM to be PM.
So oh, we that's can okay. make a meal more. Oh. No, that's right.
That's right. Your work from home. You're going
to
drive.
That's somewhere. Right. I don't need to be. Yeah, exactly.
So the second observation is, I used to watch this show about like air disasters, and it would kind of talk about this stuff. And part of the intro was like, it's not one thing that happened. It's always a combination of multiple things failing. And it's like, okay, that just brought that to mind. And the third thing was, I've done that before. Yeah. I remember shipping dev straight to prod, and it brought down the entire system. And I bypassed QA, and I had to make a quick hot fix. But yeah, we sent our customer a message one night and just said, hey, we decided to go through and roll out all those new features we said we're going to roll out next week. Translation, our intern effed up pretty bad.
Yeah, no doubt. So if you're interested, you can go read about this. Basically, they found the problem. Over the next 30 minutes, they faffed about trying to figure out what it was. About 30 minutes after the initial incident, they figured out what it was, and then it took them a couple of hours to manually roll back, because this system that they would have normally used, this SDP system, this thing that should stop bugs from shipping, I imagine it's their deployment process, automated deployment, also couldn't roll it back. So the backups weren't working, kind of thing.
I was going to ask you if this was that one where they said, yeah, we just tried to restore and it didn't work, so we're going to have to try something else. Like, well, this is bad.
So they go, they say the automatic rollback failed due to corruption of the SDP metadata. At 22:47 UTC, we initiated the process to manually update the service configuration, i.e. hacking it with Notepad++, which bypasses the SDP system. Yeah.
Wouldn't you love that if there was like a camera crew like on some of these, and we could like see like just what it went through? I mean, and not from a comedy perspective, although I'm sure there's some of that. But wouldn't you love to just kind of see like when there's an epic outage, I'd like to see how this kind of comes together. Like, let's do a documentary on it. That would be really cool.
I've seen a couple of those, and I'm not sure anybody else outside of Microsoft should, because... You might not ever use their products again.
Well, but no, I mean, that's not fair. Everybody's like that, right? Everybody's
exactly.
like that.
But it's, you know, it's airing your dirty laundry in some ways, right? Mm. Some things you think that would be completely ironed out and perfect inside a company of that size, like a complete shambles. And then other things you see that you're like, wow, I'm impressed they've got that nailed. You know what I mean? Like there's yeah. surprises at all turns, I suppose, from what I saw at least. But in fairness, you know, they do a pretty good job of it. But man, the it would be interesting watching, having a camera over somebody's shoulder as they're smashing away in Notepad++ trying to fix Azure AD.
I'd be really curious to see, like, you know, how do you go about checking the logs and what tools are you using for this? And is it homegrown stuff and how much of your own? I'm sure that everyone has their own homegrown stuff, but I wonder, like, how much of the non-homegrown stuff, like, how much other stuff would you be looking at? So
for sure.
Microsoft is quite proud of the fact that they have been named a leader in the 2020 Gartner Magic Quadrant for full lifecycle API management. And when you go look at the Magic Quadrant, you see that they are in the visionaries and leaders quadrant, the top right, along with a lot of other people, including Axway, Software AG, IBM, Kong, MuleSoft, and Google for Google's Apigee product that they acquired. I found it interesting, though, that you saw companies like AWS were not in the leaders quadrant. That surprised me a bit.
Do they not have a managed API?
They do. It's just that they weren't considered a leader, which surprised me for AWS. But
gotcha.
Or
that is interesting.
The cynical side of me says that they didn't pay Gartner enough to get in the top right quadrant. So
yeah. Got to pay your Gartner tax.
Either the money or the time sitting down with the analysts.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not true. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I shouldn't say that.
No, that sounds true. It takes a lot of work. All right. Final one before I think we can move on. The Azure is introducing some new capabilities for live video analytics, including things such as spatial analysis and computer vision for cognitive services. So being able to enhance video analytics with things like spatial relationships between people and movement in the physical domain. I don't even know what that means. I guess it just detects how much stuff is going on in a given frame of video, who's moving around.
They have a partner with in-depth perception. Is it something with, they get some interesting architectural drawings to go along with this of how it's working with NVIDIA when you scroll far enough down in the blog post. But it's really quick to where, I mean, they have enough stuff that's in there. It's like, your job is to write a blog post that's going to make this look really impressive. And they succeeded because when you get down far enough, it's like going, wow, this looks really complicated. But I mean, it's impressive like how all this stuff works.
Yeah, I've never played with on-the-fly video and media services at all. So I don't really know what's involved, but
it's expensive. It's really expensive. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, is so complicated and there's so much stuff going on that it's impressive to me that it can be as fast as it is. Not like the stock market, but like an ad platform, right? So think like a Google ad platform or Facebook's ad platform.
Yeah.
You set up, you've got things like keywords and ads and audiences, and someone goes through and types in a query, and you know how fast the results come back for Google on a Google search, that you've got a bid and you're bidding against other people to try and get your stuff to the top of the page. And if you win the bid, it gets put up there, but it gets rendered on the page. And I know that there's a certain degree of it that's probably done ahead of time, but like the amount of stuff that has to happen. And with video, same thing, to be able to do real time stuff with video. I mean, that is like, that's every frame, something is changing. So it's like, that's, you're constantly like working your tail off. But
for sure.
CJ, how'd you like to do some picks today?
Let us do it.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. Okay, I'm going to let you start because you actually picked a listener pick, and I'm going to let you explain this. I haven't seen this one yet, so.
Okay, so we have a listener pick from Robin Eisler. I think that's how you pronounce their last name. This is to a video on YouTube called Prosthesis Mech Racing. So there is a series, I suppose, or a thing. There's a Kickstarter that's been set up about this campaign. But basically there are these dudes who are making these mechs, and you use your body to move the machines, and then you can race each other.
Oh my God.
Pretty sick, huh? But you should see these machines these people have made. It's amazing. And then there's a video of them, how it all works. And, you know, so you sit in it like a, you know, it's not like a car. It's an open frame sort of exoskeleton-y kind of thing. Massive.
Mm-hmm.
As you move your arms and legs, it moves different parts of the machine, obviously. And you, you know, run around the neighborhood, terrorizing the neighborhood in your huge mech. Sweet.
The one thing I'm noticing with this, watching this video, is these things tear up the ground that they're walking on. One of the quick videos I was looking at a second ago, they were in a field and you just saw like the grass was completely shredded.
You wouldn't want to be doing it across your front yard. But this just looks so cool. It's just like building big toys.
Yeah, here's a guy. He's picking up a car and throwing a car.
How cool would that be to try? Pretty sweet.
He's pulling a fire. Wow. Okay, that's pretty cool. Good find. Thank you very much, Robin.
Yeah, so Robin, we will be in touch and we will get your address and send you out a Fido 2 key. This week, should I go next?
Yes. I'm sorry. Continue, please, CJ.
Okay, all right. There is a website I came across through reading an article called thispersondoesnotexist.com. So you hit this website and it will show you a photo of somebody that AI has built that person and rendered their face. And so each time you go to it, it's a different person and it's all built using AI. And the interesting part about it is there are other websites such as thiscatdoesnotexist.com.
Do you?
But it's all backed by an article in a YouTube video you can go watch about how it's done. And it gets kind of technical, but you can go read about how these models are built and how it's all pieced together.
Do you ever wonder if they're just BSing you?
Yeah.
You say this person doesn't exist. Like, yeah, how can you prove that? I mean, how do you know? If I'm clicking through this enough, am I going to see myself?
It's possible, but you can go download the code and run it yourself. Train it yourself with a series of images and then have it start generating images yourself.
Mm. Okay.
I think.
It's interesting.
Yeah. But it's pretty scary, right? Because they're doing it with images currently. And imagine, you know, those deep fake videos are getting pretty good. We're going to be able to do full movies with no actors at some point.
We're not going to have
full AI movie.
As a developer, I look at this and go, man, I can actually take somebody's profile picture and I can use this as a sample profile picture and not have to worry if I got a real person.
That's right.
Until Dan Jump calls me and gets all pissed. See if anybody knows it, gets that reference.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty freaky. But it uses things called generative adversarial networks. Ooh, big words.
All right. So sidebar. I was teaching a class one time at a Microsoft Technology Center and an MCT up in Boston. And we were on a restroom break. So left the room, was walking over towards the restroom. And there was a room next to us. It was set up as like a conference room. And they had little name placards out where everybody was supposed to sit. I walked by it, see a couple names. One name stuck out to me. I was like, Dan Jump. I was like,
no way.
But the weird thing was that I was teaching the class. So when I came back from the restroom, still nobody was in the room, in that conference room. Went on teaching, came back out, our lunch break, looked, nobody was in there, all the placards were out, came back from lunch, they were gone. I never got to see Dan. I kept wanting to see him. I'm like going, who is Dan?
I want to meet Dan Jump.
So, I don't know.
Huh. For those of you who don't understand that reference, well, you probably think we're completely crazy right now.
Well, CJ, we're on episode 382. If we haven't proven it by now.
That's true. We're already done. We're already crazy. Yeah. What about your pick? What have you got for us this week?
My pick is from Electric CO. A Tesla hacker reveals what driver-facing camera is looking for. On a Model 3 or a Model Y, there is a driver-facing camera in the rearview mirror. It has not been enabled or engaged for the longest time, but now all of a sudden, it is now an option where you can turn it on in your car via the software, and you can let Tesla start capturing stuff to where they could use it for research. Now, The theory is, like right now, the company has started collecting some data. You have to opt into it. They tell you, quote, if you have a Tesla, go look in the controls section, look under safety and security, data sharing, and camera analytics. It says this update is going to allow you to enable the built-in camera, a cabin camera above the rearview mirror. If it's enabled, Tesla will automatically capture images in a short video clip just prior to a collision or safety to a safety event to help engineers develop safety features and enhancements in the future. So the theory is that they're going to use this for things like drowsy driver detection or distracted driver detection or picking up your cell phone to be able to modify stuff. When you, the hacker, he goes by the name of Green, or she goes by the name of Green, she's been able to detect the following events that Tesla is actually tracking: blinded, dark, eyes closed, eyes down, eyes normal, eyes up, head down, head trunk. I don't know what that is. That's interesting.
Truncated?
Head truncated? I mean, what is that like? It's supposed to be before the accident. Looking left, looking right, phone use, sunglasses, eyes likely normal, sunglasses likely eyes down.
Interesting.
See, the thing that bothers me about this is the last two. The naming conventions are not, there's no naming convention. It says sunglasses, eyes likely normal, and then sunglasses likely eyes down. They flipped the eyes and likely around on both of the last two events. So shouldn't it be sunglasses, eyes likely normal, and sunglasses, eyes likely down? Sorry, that attention to detail pisses me off.
Oh, I see.
They've got the two the words naming in the middle.
Yeah, I see. The naming of the const strings are not...
Inconsistent.
Are inconsistent. Yes, there you go.
That just pisses
me off. Wow, that's pretty interesting. So they're doing like face and eye tracking and stuff now to build a better model. That's curious.
Yeah.
Interesting. Cool stuff. Yeah, very cool.
CJ, that is another episode in the books, episode 382. We're coming up on 400. We got a couple months. We got, 18 episodes. So what is that? 18, four, about 4 months away.
Yeah.
Let's think about something to do. Over the next 4 months, we have to think about something to do for episode 400.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, maybe, who knows? Will it be in person? Will it not? What will we do? Again.
Will the pandemic still be going on? Will it be over?
Who knows?
Will we even be here?
What if an asteroid comes and gets us? We'll never know. All right, my friend, till next time.
We will do episode 400 from space using Microsoft New Space Network. How's that? Woo-hoo. Gotta stay tuned.
I'm in.
All right. Later, dude.
See ya.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.